Hey, what's up? It's Katie. I'm coming to you with a quick note about the episode of Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory that you are about to listen to. In this episode, Ronit and I talk about the anger of allies and whether anger is the best thing for allies to bring to the table, whether we're talking about men who want to be allies to the women and survivors in their lives, or, cis people who want to be allies to the trans and non-binary communities who are under attack by the current fucking presidential administration. So one of the things that it's really important to remember as we try to learn how to be allies with lots of people whose experiences we can't necessarily relate to personally is the idea that discomfort is not going to make you burst into flames. And if you are more concerned about staying comfortable and avoiding learning about new people and new experiences than you are about including people and trying something new and maybe making a mistake from time to time, it's not really gonna help us grow. It's not really our growing food as humans. So Jill Soloway, the creator of Transparent, prefers the pronoun they. Right off the top in this episode, I use the pronoun she like 6 times. I know Jill prefers they. I knew it when we recorded the episode. I just wasn't thinking. I wasn't being mindful enough. And it popped right out there several times. So we caught it in edit and we had a conversation about whether to cut it or leave it in. Because the chances of Jill ever hearing this episode are pretty freaking low. We didn't want it to seem like some kind of weird performative cookie-seeking ally theater to have this big note at the beginning of the episode. But at the same time, in an episode where we talk about how it's important to take chances and maybe make a mistake from time to time, but not to burst into flames, to acknowledge it, say, I'm sorry, I messed up, I'm going to do better next time. We felt this was a, good opportunity to say, hi, I'm Katie. I used the wrong pronouns. I'm sorry. I messed up. I will be more mindful. I'm going to do better next time. So now without further ado, hey, look at that. I didn't burst into flames. Now without further ado, Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory with Katie and Ronit.
Peek into the reality of my life. We do like a really strict budget and mm-hmm. we have like a cash only household. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I use my debit card for is gas. Yeah. I mean, that's it.
And a debit card for some, that's actually kind of like cash.
It is. We do like straight up cash. Like every,
I know. I heard
every,
about you.
Yeah. Every time like we get paid, it's like I go to the ATM and we have
don't
like.
Don't talk about how rich in cash your house is.
I know, right?
Can you stop?
I don't.
Luckily, you have a P.O. box.
Well, and we have a safe in the house too.
Guys, did you hear that? She's also got a safe.
We're there. Yeah. We're there. We're those people. But,
well, yeah.
Yeah. So we were like, I think we might need a new bed. So we created a new envelope in
for
our cash system, and we are saving for a mattress and a bed because we want to pay cash for it and we don't want to put it on a card or anything.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, like, we have very good credit. It's not that we're like, oh shit, we got to do a credit rehab here. But like, we just...
And it would be okay really, if you didn't have good credit.
It would be so fine if I didn't have
I'm
good credit.
I'm trying to do what you do for me. Because I never say things like that, but you'd say, and it would be okay if you. So I'm telling you, it would be okay if you didn't have good credit.
You complete me.
Thank you.
You complete me. Can I tell you, it was so much fun meeting people with you last night.
I know. We were out together on a date. It was sort of like a fun work thing date. We went to this event for Jill Soloway's new book called She Wants It.
She Wants It.
Jill Soloway. Oh, hey, this is Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. What? Why is it always like that?
I don't know.
I think we're going deep now. We should probably introduce the show.
We're always like in the middle of a conversation.
Because we don't stop talking.
We never stop talking and we could just talk for years.
Forever.
For years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory.
I'm Katie.
I'm Ronit.
And last night, we went to a really, really cool event. Jill Soloway is in Seattle. She's doing her book tour for her new book.
Who is Jill Soloway?
Jill Soloway is the creator of Transparent.
What is Transparent?
It's an Amazon Prime show about a parent who is trans. Mm-hmm. That parent was originally played by Jeffrey Tambor. He is not coming back for the most recent season.
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting show and very strange. And I mean that as a full-on compliment. Like, if I ever call you strange, like... you're welcome.
Yes. And also, as a Jewish woman, I can say, as a cisgender Jewish woman, I'm going to say that there is a Jewish feeling to the show, which makes sense because we met not only Jill Soloway last night, but Faith Soloway,
yes,
her sister, who's doing the music for the movie musical version of Transparent, right?
Yes. The last episode of the season is going to be a movie musical.
And to like even top this, the whole event was at Temple D'Hirsch, which is a synagogue. And this is where sometimes Seattle Arts and Lectures holds their events. There were so many people there last night. But so there was a big Jewish vibe there. Of course, I was in the minority in the audience, and so were Jill and Faith Soloway, because, you know, there aren't a lot of us in Seattle necessarily.
Yep. Yep.
But it was funny because you kind of get that aesthetic, that sort of, I don't know, self-depreciating.
Yep.
I'm so confused. And the whole show, also, they had Hannah Gadsby there.
Yes, Hannah
so
Gadsby.
So funny.
Of Nanette fame.
So.
And other things. Like, what's so funny
and Morgan
is that,
Parker, the poet.
Yes, Morgan Parker, the poet. What's so funny is that Hannah Gadsby has had a very long and successful career as a comic.
Mm.
And everyone knows her from Nanette. I mean, not everyone.
That's funny.
A
so
lot
you're
of people
she's
know
been around
her
for
before.
A long time, but I just heard of her.
She is catapulted to fame, like, practically overnight. When Nanette dropped, it was a phenomenon, rightfully so. It's a fucking amazing
No spoilers
piece of art.
Here. Apparently,
no.
So I must admit that I'm a third through.
Okay, wait. So if you're listening to
it's
this.
It's on Netflix.
And you know that Ronit is a third of the way through Nanette, and you've seen the whole thing. You probably just made the noise I just made, which is, like, the good part is coming.
So the nice thing about Nanette, I heard about it, like a lot of things. I hear about stuff, and then when I hear it in more than two or three places, I think I have to pay attention because I'm slow. Like, I'm slow on the uptake that way. I am. Why are you laughing?
You're so slow. You're just the slowest.
I wait for the three times I hear it. But anyhow, and then I decide it's worth my time to look into it if I hear from several people. So I heard about Nanette, but I didn't jump on. And then when I realized it was a one-off, not a series that I have to commit to, but
yep.
just, you know, one show, I got more interested. And then even more interested when I realized I was seeing Hannah Gadsby last night. And you guys, Hannah Gadsby is so funny.
She's,
like, just incidentally funny.
She's extraordinarily
funnier in this
funny.
Than maybe in Nanette, because
yes.
she was sort of entertaining us and warming us up and just, you know, improvising. It was really funny. So anyway, the point is, this is about the book tour. It's a book tour called She Wants It, which is Jill Soloway, who now identifies as
Non-binary. And Jill prefers they. Which I have to tell you, I was super nervous about fucking up to pronouns because I was like, if I get a chance to talk to Jill, I don't want to be like, you know what she just said, you know, speaking to a third person in the conversation. Like, I had a very involved fantasy about the way in which I was going to fuck up Jill's pronouns. But, you know,
luckily we didn't meet her, so it didn't come up.
Exactly.
We didn't meet them.
Exactly.
We didn't meet them. But her sister.
Right.
But their sister, pardon me, I'm practicing.
I know.
I'm a practicing person on
you
this.
You know what? And let me just say, the important thing is to stay mindful and practice and just keep moving.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Faith Soloway introduced Jill Soloway as their sibling.
Exactly.
You know, because we were wondering, how will Jill Soloway be introduced?
Well,
introducing
Faith,
my sibling.
Faith said, I'm Jill's sister. And then she said, here's my sibling.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Anyway, so the reason this is extra relevant is because today on the show, we want to talk about the government's proposal that was leaked to, well, this is not the only thing we want to talk about, but to basically do away with any kind of specification of transgender that
or non-binary.
Non-binary. Your gender at birth, whatever that means.
Which can be only male or female.
Yes, because they're going to base it on only the visible genitals, which completely wipes out people in their mind that have any kind of combination of chromosomes that makes them less than, you know, in these categories. And so that's a very big fear among the transgender community. And really for all of us, I would argue. Plus the idea of what can we do as cisgender people, right?
Mm-hmm.
To help people in the transgender community during this time. And what do we do with anger when we are not exactly part of the group that is being victimized?
Exactly. So I'm gonna walk away for a second, but I'm boomeranging right now, because the reason that we wanted to talk about this is we had a listener, Tim.
Hey Tim.
What up, Tim? Tim wrote in a fantastic question, and he wrote, what do you think is the possible role for men's anger in service of social justice, particularly white men's anger? We're allowed access to that tool in a way that others aren't. Besides pointing out that inequity and questioning it, is there a way that we could be using it, given its power in our culture? Or is white men's anger so tied in with the suppression of other voices into implied violence and intimidation that it would do more harm than good?
Yep.
I mean, Tim.
Tim.
You guys, that's Tim.
Tim.
Tim, I do just want to say, like, I am going to take credit for the fact that we have a listener who's, like, so fucking emotionally intelligent. Like, I just, I feel like...
High-fiving over the mic.
Yeah, we're high-fiving over the mic right now.
My voice just dropped.
So we were kicking over this question, or turning over the question. I just did
kicking
a real
around.
Neat.
Kicking you around. Did. It's contagious.
We were kicking around this question of what is the role of white men's anger in the Me Too movement? And to be more specific, what is the role of white men's anger on behalf of survivors? Not because to say what's the role of men in the Me Too movement implies that men don't have their own Me Too stories.
Sure.
But we're not talking about that. Like, we're talking about men who don't necessarily have a Me Too story, but who are angry on behalf of the survivors that they know and who want to express that anger as a way of showing solidarity with the women who are mm-hmm. justifiably angry right now and the survivors who are justifiably angry right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, Ronit? What is, like, if you were telling a Me Too story to someone and a guy got really angry about it, yeah. how would you respond to that?
I think it really is a case-by-case type of thing, because sometimes it reminds me a little bit when maybe you tell someone something sad that happened to you and they start to get tears in their eyes and they start to get sad for you. Mm. And then you kind of feel like you have to take care of them.
Yep.
And it is a show of empathy. And of course, as the listener in those situations, you feel like you're really hearing the person who's telling you their trauma or their sadness. But I think it's very personal how you're going to take it. If the teller is going to feel like they then need to take care of that person and calm down their anger or tamp down their sadness, or if they're going to reach their hand out or say, you know, thank you, I see that you're really listening to me. I think it's like just people. It's very individual. Because I remember something happened to me Halloween years ago when I was a kid. I was 13. I've written about it a little bit, and I was actually surrounded by a group of kids who ended up beating me up, and I was separated from my friends, and I was alone, and it's a whole long story. But when I got home, I remember telling my father, who was a really good, you know, dad, I remember being really upset and shaken because I was covered in shaving cream. My costume was in tatters. I was afraid. And I remember telling him this story, and I don't recall him saying anything. Mm. I don't recall seeing the flash of super anger, or I'm going to go out and fix this, or I didn't see that. And it to me, like, implicitly, it meant like it wasn't as big a whoop. Do you know what I mean? That was the way I took that. As sort of like, I wish you could be more enraged for me, hold the feeling for me, because I can't figure out what I'm feeling right now.
So if he had responded like, what? Who did this to you?
Yes.
I'm going to go, like,
in
that
case, I would have really liked it. Again, I was in the early shock stages of what had just happened. Maybe 10 years later, 5 years later, it would be different. But I still think for me, I needed that hero for myself.
And you know what's interesting? I was thinking about this too, that when you hear women expressing anger over and over and over again about these injustices that so many of us have experienced and can relate to, whether it's a sexual assault or a microaggression at work, like constantly being interrupted or constantly having your ideas, you know, other people taking credit for your ideas as if you don't even exist,
mm-hmm.
our anger becomes, in a way, kind of like when you're lighting a stage, if you use only blue lights, your eye starts to see it as white. So you have to keep a white light on stage if you want the stage to continue to look blue to the audience. It's a trick of lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And women's anger about women's issues and isolation kind of become like that blue light where it starts to just feel normal. And so I feel like I need the anger of the men in my life to help me see, like, oh, this light is blue. This is whack. This is fucked up. Like, mm-hmm. you're right. I'm angry too. And I'm glad you're angry.
Well, right. It's just like sometimes when you are working something out, for me, and this again is another, obviously everyone's different, there are so many feelings for everybody, and there's no one answer. That's always my answer, is there's no one answer, one size doesn't fit all. But sometimes I've needed to hear things over and over again to understand that I have room or I am justified in my feelings, because for some people, feelings are not, they don't feel like you're allowed to have them. I mean, for some people, they don't feel that their feelings are valid unless somebody else reflects it back.
Yeah.
You know, some of us don't give ourselves room for our feelings to be okay. We are scared of that, some of us. And so when someone might reflect back to us that I see you. That isn't cool. I understand why you'd be upset. It is empowering. Do you know what I mean? That doesn't bother me.
See, and I kind of come down on the opposite side of this one, because while I need to know that injustice pisses you off too, like I need that, but I don't want you to show it to me. Like, it's an interesting paradox, because I want you to be angry, but if you're angry around me, I'm going to get scared. And my instinct is going to be to
want to take care of you or
take
stop
care of you. Calm you down, because I know that, like, I mean, the whole narrative of male anger is that it's like barely under control at all times, right? Like I can't even control my anger. I'm so angry. I'm just going to punch a wall. Okay, but you could have not punched a wall. But, you know, like, because anger is this thing that is very accessible to men and is encouraged in men. It's like, in many ways, the only emotional display that is encouraged in men. It feels like a very, very dangerous thing for me to encounter.
Well, this, you know? This reminds me a little bit, if we just step a little bit over here a little bit off the no like come over this way now
we're gonna draw well, like a dance diagram on the floor of this
put
show.
Your left foot in five and your right foot in six. Swing your partner. Morgan Parker was, we were talking a little bit, they were talking last night, I felt like I was on stage, which is why I said we were talking, but I wish they'd asked me up. So
we wanted to talk
so
to
Morgan
them.
Parker, who is a woman of color, said that hashtags are not enough, and so this transcends any particular movement that you're interested in. I think it applies to all. She said it's important to not just be theoretical. You need to kind of, you know, what she said was, it's good to read books. And I'm going to kind of paraphrase here because I took notes. It's good to read books. It's nice that you nailed all the phrases and you can be vocal. You know, you're doing some of that and educating yourself and people around you. But now you have to take the second step, which is go do the field work. So now it's time for you to find a human person and not just the idea of a person, mm-hmm. and help them. So if you want to support trans rights or trans people, go find a business, for example, owned by a trans person. Give them your money, right? They were saying that's one of the good things about capitalism. You know, use your resources to help people and share the power. That's how you can dismantle the power structure. So again, like, if you are aware of someone who has perpetrated something against a woman, like, and you have a lot of anger about it, find a way to support that woman in some way that doesn't have to do with her holding or having to be handling your anger.
Exactly. I think that is and in the same way that, like, as a cis woman, I am 100% outraged by this idea of excluding trans people from the fucking written reality of our country. Like,
right.
That is so fucked up.
Well,
hashtag won't be erased, right? Like, you cannot just simply say, I'm not going to include you on the census. I'm not going to include you as a category of human. You cannot do that.
So in the
and I'm outraged about it. But is cis outrage scary to trans people in the same way that male outrage is scary to women?
So the Washington Post ran this perspective by Monica Hess, which is, it's out this week. Why should the government or anyone care what's between a person's legs? And so recently there was news that came out that the government was declaring, it was a leak, that it would determine people's genders, quote, on a biological basis that is clear, grounded in science, objective, and, I'm going to say this word wrong, administrable? Administrable?
What?
I don't know. So it's
what,
like,
are you administering?
Right. So basically what it would be, the scientific argument against this proposal is only half of it. And there is a lot of scientists are coming out with this, with essays and think pieces about how can you do this? There's a lot of complex chromosomal differences. But the idea that that someone should be defined at birth for the rest of their lives, even if they don't feel that way, should not be the government's, should be in the government's purview, right? And what this writer, Monica, said was, I am asking sincerely, what do we hope that permanently and irrevocably assigning a gender seconds after clipping the umbilical cord would accomplish? Safety, certainty for the baby or the grown-ups? Because that's, you know, it's for grown-ups to feel more you know, organized, a little bit more secure about where they stand? It's so that there's no kind of nuance or any kind of scary gray area.
Okay. So, all right. So this whole thing seems like it was apparently a fucking 4-alarm fire that people were so uncomfortable with the idea of not understanding all of the complexity of a person's identity that we have to slam shut the door on any kind of uncertainty in order to maintain the comfort of, like, the social comfort of people who are apparently will burst into flames and or melt into a puddle if they are ever confronted with a person whose gender is not immediately obvious to them. It's so bizarre to me that, like, Lindsey Graham, I'm going to pick on Lindsey Graham because
it's easy.
I mean, it really, he hands it to me every day. Mm-hmm. But like someone like Lindsey Graham, his comfort is so important to maintain and to never interrupt that you're going to force hundreds of thousands of people into a place where they are not free to just be who they are, never having met Lindsey Graham and will never meet Lindsey Graham. Like, these people are not going to be in his life. They're not going to cross paths with it. Like, most trans people are not going to meet you, whoever you're listening to. Like, you just aren't, they're, like, the idea of oppressing these people who are in no way related to your life feels, and I got to find another word because I want to say feels insane to me, but
off the
word
wall
I'm looking for, it feels needlessly cruel. Like, needlessly, pointlessly cruel.
Well, it's
when
not,
you should be focusing on some other fucking shit.
No,
it's
part of that larger behavior. I would venture to say, like, this is America. We only accept what we want to accept. We don't have room for people who don't fit into our categories. And exactly this, because to tell someone, you know, this is getting out of hand, you know, what's going to happen? There's going to be more and more homosexuals everywhere. There's going to be more and more people who want to dress up in women's clothing or want to cut their hair. It's just, it's all fear-based. It's fear-mongering.
Stupid.
And it's interesting because I it takes a little getting used to new things for some people. And I can understand that most of us have this orientation as of this moment in time, to understand if someone's more male or more female. That's how I grew up. You know, is it male? Is it female? Are you a boy? Are you a girl? What's feminine? What's masculine? And as I've gotten older, I've lived in Seattle and been exposed to the different kinds of people I'm meeting here and what my kids in school are learning in school in terms of tolerance and stuff, that it doesn't always need an assignment. And, you know, I think that by the time my kids are grown, and certainly, you know, if they have kids, gender, I think, will be diluted. And that's what I'm starting to understand. I mean, the first time you're exposed to something, you might be surprised, you might not understand it. But the more you get to know that thing, the more you can lose your attachments to the old way of thinking. And just like this, if I got to know some more transgender people, then that would be the people I know who are affected by this. It's not just an idea in my head. So that's kind of what Morgan Parker was talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can say, like, for me personally, the first time I met someone who I knew pre-transition and post-transition, I was nervous. I was uncomfortable, not because I thought that this person was scary, but because I was afraid that I was going to fuck something up and, like, hurt that person's feelings and be unintentionally harmful. Like, I didn't want to be unintentionally harmful. So I was really mindful and I was really careful and I did a lot of research before I went to see this person again, where I knew this person was going to be, so that I could make sure to, like, okay, I want to be respectful of your life. I want to be as kind as possible and as inclusive as possible. And if it means I'm going to spend half an hour learning a new social norm and then fuck it up a few times in person and apologize and then do it right and keep, like, carving that neural pathway for myself, I'm happy to do that work. And guess what? I didn't burst into flames or melt into a puddle. It was fine. I was uncomfortable, but then I learned and I got over it, and everyone, like, my circle got wider. Mm-hmm. And the thing that really bothers me is that, like, there's this sense that if you're not comfortable, that what you're doing must be wrong. And I think we have to leave that idea
behind.
If
you're not comfortable, what someone else is doing is wrong?
No, like, if you're in a situation where you're uncomfortable, you shouldn't be in that situation.
Mm, right.
And I just think that's wrong. Like, we're going to be uncomfortable as we grow and evolve, because no matter, for example, in terms of race, no matter how long I've been working on trying to be anti-racist, I have been racist for longer. No matter how long I have been trying to work on, you know, thinking about like eradicating heteronormativity and this idea of the binary, like boys and girls, I have been heteronormative and binary for longer. And so it's going to take work and it's going to take time and it's going to be uncomfortable. But that's like, what am I really going to say? Like, no, I'm not going to acknowledge who you are because it's a lot of work for me. It's not even that much work.
It's not that much work. And we find time to watch the shows we like and to look on the sites that we like. And we can find time to learn some new vocabulary. When you first get to a place, an actual geographical location, you don't know your way around. You have to get used to it. And soon the blocks and the hills or wherever you are start to become familiar and you get to know your way around. And I think it's the same thing with learning something new about people. And the other thing that Morgan Parker said, which really struck me, was she said, you know, not everyone can be Harriet Tubman, you know, and some people aren't going to go to the marches and they don't want to be around crowds. But, and she was talking about herself, she'll make the soup. She'll make the big pot of soup. And when you're done at your march, she'll feed you. You come in and she'll take care of you. So you can find the way in which you can become helpful. You can find, whether it's going to see a show, whether it's buying, you know, Hannah Gatsby's album or Jill Soloway's book or finding a local artist nearby who happens to be trans. There are ways that you can become involved and put a face, a human personality to something that isn't entirely your group of people.
Yeah. No, yeah. I totally agree with you. And to bring this back around to this idea of like the usefulness of an ally's anger, like, is our anger about this most recent act of douchebaggery? I mean, douchebaggery is like such a reductive term for this, right? Like, this is truly monstrous behavior. Is my outrage about it useful to my trans and non-binary friends and loved ones? Like, is it useful to them? Or am I just becoming that guy who's angry about my Me Too story that I now feel like I have to fucking calm down because you're scaring me, you know? Like, I don't know.
I think you just roll up your sleeves. You deal with your anger. You can, if someone's really angry and they happen to be transgender, you can be like, I totally get it. I'm angry for you. Let's go do something about this. What can I do? Who do you need me to call? You know, what representatives do we need to get on the phone?
That's such a good point, because there's a difference between being angry in a way that is like, look whose side I'm on. Ah, everyone look and see how angry I am. And like, all right, let's get to fucking work.
Yeah.
On
and
this,
you know,
right,
someone
now
last night on the stage said, you know, ask them if they're okay. Ask them if they need anything. And then someone else added, you know, ask them if they want dinner. And then I remembered one of our episodes where you're like, don't ask them what they want or are they okay? Just bring them dinner. I got you dinner. Here's, you know, that, you know what I mean? Like, you just take it the extra step. And I think in terms of being uncomfortable, you mentioned that if you don't know something, you immediately think you're not supposed to be there. But Monica Hess, in that article I mentioned, one of the pieces I took away from it that I really liked was, what if we allowed ourselves to remain uncomfortable? What if, instead of looking at other humans as something to be categorized, we saw in them a chance to appreciate the vastness of humanity? And that's what I'm talking about. There's just like this humanism, this appreciation for other human beings who are with us on this journey, and we don't have to assign them the labels that make us feel better.
Yes, 100%. Like, I am not 4 years old anymore. I don't need to understand how to categorize people. Like, that is a thing that toddlers need. Mm-hmm. That is not necessarily a thing that adults need anymore.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like, it's going to be okay, even if it's uncomfortable for a little while.
Mm-hmm. There was an idea of, with the mission also last night of, and this book tour that Jill Soloway is taking, it's not a traditional book tour because Jill Soloway is not just reading from the book that they wrote and having questions with the audience, but trying to provide sort of a platform and a variety show and sort of a feminist, you know, conversation.
Totally.
And so one of the other things that came out, which I think helps to share here on the podcast, is that let's see how we can get love and tolerance to unite the left, because they were saying we really need the left to get united. We need to come together to fight the right's love of power. Mm-hmm. You know, like the right has this love of power, and we need to get this love and tolerance. We've gotten all different measures together to take on the strength of the right's love of power. And so I think that's what they were trying to workshop last night a little bit on this book tour. What can we do, you know?
Yeah, well, and what an interesting question, because the idea of love and tolerance, like especially the idea of tolerance, we're really kind of turning it inside out where, you know, there's so much intolerance in the world right now that we have to reject, in essence, being intolerant of intolerance, right? But where do you draw that line for yourself in terms of like what I can tolerate being around? Mm-hmm. Like the people that I'm willing to stand next to.
Right, they were talking about that too. Like, can you handle a conversation with racists? Can you handle a conversation with, what was the other one?
Pro-life.
Pro-life people, right?
Pro-lifers, yeah.
And so one woman was saying how pro-life, she couldn't, I think they were mentioning another writer in Seattle who just could not tolerate a conversation with pro-life people. And someone else said, well, I can handle that, but I can't handle being around racists. And then someone else said, you know, I can take being around the racists and talking to them for you. I'll take on that because I can handle that right now.
Yep. Well, it's just so funny because the solution really is as simple, not easy, but simple as just everyone do what you can do.
Yep.
And
don't give up.
Don't give up.
Don't give up.
But you do what you can do. You don't have to do everything, but just do what you can do. And things will get taken care of.
I have an idea what people who are not in the group of people or don't, what's the word I want? They don't, not relate. They're not part of a transgender group or they're not part of a group of women who've experienced assault. They can maybe take their anger. Like, for example, Tim was asking, they can take their anger and maybe they can inspire the people who are just like them, who aren't the victims of this type of racism or bigotry. So, for example, Tim can go get his other white male friends together,
yeah,
and be like, I'm furious about this. Let's do something. And then the burden of his anger isn't taken out on the Me Too women or the transgender community. So you motivate your friends with your rage, perhaps. You know, you get a book club together and have your friends read a book that they need to read about this.
Yes.
You know,
oh my,
I mean?
Gosh. I would. Can we get like a white cis male book club that only reads works of literature by like queer women and non-binary authors of color? Like,
yeah,
that would be so cool. Just to get, just to have like a group of people who are coming together to say like, you know what, on purpose, I'm going to start to expand my definition, yeah, of what the human voice sounds like.
Totally.
Oh my God. That would be amazing.
Yeah. So yeah. That'd and so you know, great. Educators too, if you're an educator, you know, and you have any control over the curriculum, you can add those books in.
Yeah, totally agree. I also have this idea of, okay, so I want there to be like a kickboxing class that, that men can take. And I kind of want to call it like Total Human Workout, where like, so it's all men and there's a therapist and a trainer in the room, right? And at first it feels like just like a really intense boxing class, like, ah, oh, you know, there, and but the soundtrack is all like Katy Perry, Beyonce, like it's all like woman rockers, Lady Gaga, like it's exercise music, but it's all women's voices. And they're like just wailing on these punching bags. And then periodically throughout the course of this boxing class, voices will come on kind of mixed in with the music of just women telling stories about things that have happened to them. Because men are able to access their anger so easily, mm-hmm, but it's like, interrogate what's underneath that anger, man. Like, what is that anger about? When you're in this state of like high arousal, high emotional arousal, get your minds out of the gutter.
I know okay, what you're talking about. I remember once in college, my friend told me when I liked this guy, she's like, you should go jogging with him like that other girl does, because then he'll get really excited by you and he'll want to have relations. But she didn't say
did
it that
work?
Way. I'm just trying to be.
No, did
I,
you?
Didn't go, I didn't go running. I don't run. I mean, I only started running when I was like 22. So no, I was like, that sounds like a nice idea, but I'm not going that far.
That could backfire. I feel, mm-hmm, like that would definitely backfire for me. But anyway, like, I want to have this idea of like incorporating this group activity that is very familiar and very accessible and like utilizes their known emotional toolkit, which is like, I angry kill it. Please don't,
oh, cut it
don't
out.
Write
not
me
all men
things.
Are like that.
Not all,
not
me,
all
don't
men.
Don't hashtag
like
not all men.
My
Mironi.
Husbands don't talk like that. My husband
does doesn't either.
Like
my husband doesn't either. And yet, for the vast majority of men, the emotion that they're most comfortable expressing is hunger. No, is anger.
No,
right?
I'd say it was hunger in my family.
Well, yeah. Hunger and anger
hangry.
Are basically
hangry.
The same thing.
Hangriness.
Basically the same thing. But I want to be able to like marry those feelings together where it's like, look at what's under the anger. Like when you hear about these stories, you're angry, but like, what else are you? Are you sad? Are you scared? Are you ashamed?
Do you feel helpless?
Do you feel helpless? Like what else is there for you? And then like, my vision is that by the end of the class, like all the men will be crying and hugging each other and like saying I statements, like I feel statements. I don't know how to make that happen.
Just gotta do it.
I also need some one-way glass there with like a very comfortable sitting room.
Oh, stop.
So the ladies can watch, because I do feel like I would really enjoy watching men be angry on punching bags about sexual violence.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I would find that very satisfying because there's glass between us and I don't actually have to manage that.
I've
shit
come
right
around.
Okay,
I'll go watch it with you.
Okay. This is a totally unviable idea. This is a terrible idea. But like, there's something there. There's something there about like emotionally cleansing yourself,
yeah,
and getting to a place where like you can be angry, but then figure out what you're going to do with that anger.
Exactly.
If you have something to say about this episode and it's nice, you can find us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/mouthymessymandatory. Please come join the conversation. You can also find us on Twitter at Mouthy Podcast and on Instagram at Mouthy Podcast. Mouthy Messy Mandatory is a large network podcast. That's LARJ, large. Thanks for listening. Oh, P.S.
What?
Write us a fucking review, motherfucker.
Yeah, let's
come
get
on
some more.
Man, yeah, no, write us some reviews.
Yeah, yeah,
it helps other people find the podcast, and then you'll have more people to talk about Mouthy Messy Mandatory with, and you can be like, remember when Katie said that thing about men being emotionally stupid? That was so rude. Don't do that.
Are you back on recording? Or yeah, so she said, so I always do that. All right, you guys, I have tics. Okay, I have tics. All right.
I'm not going to be brilliant to an empty mic. Okay.
I hoard it. I'm out for the whole week now. I'm done. I'm just going to go back into a little cocoon.